We're holding on page 116 in Tainus Ois Lamed Zayin. The Gemara has a discussion about the concept of Tainus Shois, of fasting only for part of a day. So in that connection, the Gemara brings Ma'ukva Ikla the Ginzek. Ma'ukva, one of the Amoraim, one time visited Ginzek, which is a city in Modai. Nowadays it no longer exists, but whatever the area where it was is in northwestern Iran. Anyway, Bomine, so they asked him several questions. Here in Ein Yaakov, it leaves out in the Gemara, it mentions that they asked him three questions, two in Halacha and one in Agadta, and the first one they asked him in Halacha is about whether it's possible to fast the Tainus Shores, which is how it comes in over here. The second one had to do with Yain Nesach, and in fact, this discussion is also brought in Masechta Avodah Zarah for that reason. Anyway, here in Ein Yaakov, it mentions only the third.
What shows exactly is what again?
What?
Tainus
Shores, to fast for a few hours in a day, is such a thing a valid concept.
And that was equivalent to a whole... Or
whether it counts as a fast before, yeah. But here in Ein Yaakov mentions only the third one. What did Moshe wear when he served in the Mishkan during the 7 days of Miluim? Aaron and his sons at that point are not the Kohenim yet. They wore the big kahuna during those days, and they're sort of practicing the avodah. But Moshe is functioning as the Kohen Gadol. We never find where it says he wore the big kahuna. So what was he wearing during that time? Loi have a biyade. So he didn't know the answers to any of these three questions. Rashi, by the way, over here brings a girsa that's not Ma'ukva, but rather Rabbi Akiva. But Rashi says that's not really possible. First of all, how would Rabbi Akiva not know the answers to such things? Rabbi Akiva, Mela Ma'ukva, okay, he's one of the Amoraim, but he's not the greatest of them or anything. So you could say he didn't know something about Rabbi Akiva. You're going to say he didn't know such things. Second of all, Rashi says that if it was with Rabbi Akiva, it wouldn't be told in a style of a story in the Gemara, rather it would be brought in the style of a Braisa, Tonon Abonon, or something like that, or Tanya, Pamachas, one time Rabbi Akiva came to Ginzak. Tosfos over there in Avodah Zarah points out that second one is not really such a question. We do find other episodes involving Tanoim that are told in the style of a story of the Gemara like this. But anyway, so Rashi prefers the Girsa Ma'uk. Anyway, also Vashol Be Medrash. So Ma'ukva went and asked in the Beis Medrash. Omrulay, so they told him, so they gave him answers to the first two, which again are not here in Ein Yaakov. And as far as the third question about what Moshe wore when he was doing when he was serving during the Shivas Ma'amiluim, Becholuk Lovon. He was wearing a white robe. So not Bigda Kohuna per se, but he was wearing a white robe. Rashi points out it wasn't going to be, but Bapashtos, we're not going to assume that he wore Stam, his regular clothes, to do the Avodah and the Mishkan. So no, he wore a white robe. And Rav Kahana Masni Becholuk Lovon She'in La Imra. Rav Kahana added the detail, it was a white robe that had no Imra. Now what is an Imra? So Rashi over here explains that an Imra means a hem. So what it means is, in other words, Rashi explains that this robe was woven all out of one piece. Usually a robe like that with sleeves would be woven out of several pieces that are then stitched together, and you have hems on the ends and where the parts are attached. Here Rashi says Moshe did not want to wear something that has hems or seams in it because people might suspect him of hiding money. As we find in Masechta Shkalim, when the person would go into the Lishka to take out the money that's going to be used for spending on the korbanos, on the other expenses of the Beis Mikdash, he would also, for the same reason, he wouldn't wear a robe that has a hem or anything like that, because v'yisim nekiyim me'ashem v'yisrael. Now, Rashi in Masechta Avodah Zarah brings that explanation as well. However, there he says it doesn't really work, because by the time we're talking about over here, by the time Moshe is doing the Avodah in the Mishkan, it's long since been built. Mela, while it was being built, people might suspect him of misappropriating something. But after it's already built, there's nothing for him to take. So therefore, why would he have to avoid that during the time? So Tosfos over there actually gives several other explanations of what it means that it didn't have an Imra. One is that it means it didn't have, usually garments often have like they have an edging, they have a border made out of some other material or fringes for decoration or whatever on the edges. Here, Moshe did not wear that, first of all, so people should realize that it's special made for this purpose. It's not something ordinary that he just decided to repurpose for the Mishkan. It also demonstrates that this way people should realize that it's only a temporary thing. It's not that Moshe is serving as Kohen Gadol and then Hashem decided he's disqualified and and taking them away from it and giving them to Aaron. No, to begin with, it was only meant as a temporary thing. And then Tosfos brings another girsa over there. The word is not imra with an aleph, but rather amra with an ayin, which is the Aramaic word for wool. So it would mean, unlike the big de kahuna, which contained shatnez, they contained both linen and wool, the robe that Moshe wore for this purpose was all linen with no wool at all. So that's the idea. The Maharal talks about that it represents the white represents simplicity, it represents pshitus, like the oneness of Hashem and so forth. There's a sicha where the Rebbe talks about that the idea is that it demonstrates, it actually brings it on a pasuk as well, that it demonstrates that Moshe's being a Kohen Gadol was not a separate thing, it's an outgrowth of his role as the teacher, as the bringer of the Torah to the Jewish people, and therefore in token of that, he wears this white garment rather than wearing big kahuna. So again, Ma'ukva didn't know that. They told him in the Mismedrash that this is what it was. It represents purity. Yeah. Okay. At the end of the perek, it talks about you have the dinim about when they're davening during fast days and they're falling on their faces and saying tachnun and so forth. So the Gemara brings Amar Rav Elazar, this part we had in Megillah as well. Amar Rav Elazar, ein adam choshev rashoy lipol aponav, an important person is not allowed to fall on his face in public. LMK Nanak Yeshua ben Nun, unless he knows that he's going to be answered by Hashem right away, like Yeshua ben Nun. So Rashi over here explains the reason is because that way, if he doesn't get answered, then people are going to make fun of him. People are going to say that he's not worthy of being answered. Marsha brings another reason. Okay, that would explain. Fine, maybe it's not a good idea for him to do. Why ain't it Rashi? So Marsha brings from Yerushalmi, the reason is because then it'll cause a chilul Shema, it'll cause a chilul Hashem. People are going to think that he's a hypocrite, that he's only pretending to be a tzaddik, and he's really not. Marsha says another reason as well. The Gemara had said in the piece before this, which is in the Gemara, not here in Ein Yaakov, that when it comes to there are certain a person always has to be careful to not act in a way of yuhara. A person has to act with lefnim meshuras hadin and all that, but a person has to be careful not to act in a way that makes it look like he's making himself, like he's holding himself higher than he really is. So if he were to fall on his face in public, and he's not the kind of person who's necessarily going to be answered by Hashem, it amounts to merci kiyora. It looks like he's holding himself higher than he is, as though he's of caliber of Yeshua, for example. For this reason, by the way, even though we have by Tachnun, it's called Nefilas Apayim, and properly speaking, it involves prostrating full length on the ground. Nevertheless, we don't do that. We just put our arm on our shoulder. Among the reasons is based on this, because even the greatest tzaddik shouldn't be falling on his face on the ground in front of everybody. So, as we find by Yeshua, by Yom Hashem or Yeshua Kumloch, Hashem says to Yeshua, get up. This is after the story. So they had fought the battle of Yericho and destroyed the city, and everything from Yericho was supposed to go to was either supposed to be destroyed or given to Hekdesh, and Ochan took some of the spoils, and then when they next fought against the next city, the city of Ai, then the Jewish people were defeated, and Yeshua falls on his face, and they're ripping their clothes and so forth and davening to Hashem, what's going on over here? And Hashem tells Yeshua, Kumloch, get up. Why are you falling on your face? So the implication is, in other words, that Hashem listened to his tefillah. So there, and Hashem is telling him, get up, why are you falling on your face? You don't need to fall on your face anymore. I'll tell you what's going on and then how you can correct it. In Megillah, Rashi explains differently. Again, as we mentioned at the beginning of the Masechta, what's printed here is Pirush Rashi on Tainus may not actually be from Rashi. And we see there are so many places where he contradicts his own explanations in other places. Anyway, in Megillah, Rashi says the opposite. Since Hashem is telling Yeshua, why are you falling on your face? That implies even for Yeshua, he shouldn't have done that unless he knew that Hashem is going to answer him right away. Also, Rav Elazar says an important person is not allowed to wear sackcloth on his flesh, as people would do in those times, as an expression of tshuva and of sorrow and everything. Unless he's going to be answered by Hashem, like Yehoram ben Achav. Yehoram was one of the kings of the kingdom of the Aseres HaShvatim. He, like pretty much all those kings, was a Rosha. However, we find that he had a shtickle schus, and when he put on sackcloth, then Hashem answered him shortly after that. The story, as it describes in Sefer Melachim, there was a siege of the capital city of Shomron going on at that time. There was a terrible famine in the city. People were reduced to eating garbage. And one day he's walking on top of the wall, and a woman complains to him, and she says that we're, and the gist of her story is that we're reduced to cannibalism. People are eating their own children, like it foretells in the Torah and the Tochacha. And then the pasuk says that Yehoram, hearing that, ripped his clothes, and everybody saw that under his clothes he's wearing sackcloth. And shortly after that, he talks with the Navi, with Elisha, and Elisha tells him, Shimu Dvar Hashem, that very soon the siege is going to be over and pride and prices in Shomron will fall to very low prices. This is we have the story in the Haftarah of Parashas Metzorah, of Abba Anoshim, Hayu Metzorayim, how the four Metzorayim discovered the camp of the Aramim abandoned, and everybody went and plundered the camp.
Unless a person is going to go on past experiences with Hashem and past communications, how is he going to know
what
he's going to
do? And that's what I mean, whether he knows he's of the caliber of, yeah. Shenema, as the pasuk said, Vehi Chishmoy Amelach Zivra Isha, when the king heard the words of this woman, where she told him how they're down to eating their own children, by Yikras Godav, he ripped his clothing, Vehu over Alachoma, he's walking on top of the wall to see what's going on at the siege, by Yarhom, and everybody saw, Vehi Nasak Abasori Miboyas, and there was sackcloth on his skin inside, underneath his clothes. So for him to show off publicly that he's wearing sackcloth is only appropriate only if he's going to be answered right away, as in fact he was.
What's the word mibayos
mean? Mibayos means from the inside, meaning underneath his clothes, like directly on his skin.
Like the word for a house.
It is. The word of house is inside, right? The inside a house. Is, yeah. So therefore the word bias comes to mean inside more generally. Yeah. So now we're talking about falling on your face, and we're talking about ripping a person ripping his clothes, and both of those are ways of evoking Hashem's rachmin. But the Amar Rav Elazar, loy hakol b'nefila v'loy hakol b'kriya. You should know, not everybody is going to be answered by Hashem by falling on their faces, and not everybody is going to be answered by ripping their clothes. Meaning, it depends on the caliber of the person. Moshe v'Aaron b'nefila, Yeshua v'kolib v'kriya. We find, for example, in the story of the Meraglim, that Moshe and Aaron fell on their faces and Hashem answered them, whereas Yeshua and Kolib, who are on a lesser level, they had to rip their clothes. Moshe v'Aaron b'nefila, Shenema v'yupal Moshe v'Aaron b'gomer. They fell on their faces when the people, when the Meraglim come back with their report and everybody's crying and saying, we can't go into Eretz Yisrael, etc. So the pasuk says that Moshe and Aaron fell on their faces. Meanwhile, Yeshua v'kolib v'kriya, d'chdiv, as the psukim there say, v'yeshua b'nun v'cholib b'nyufunim, v'natorim es'aretz. They, among the Meraglim, koru b'gdehem, they ripped their clothes. So the implication is, in other words, that Moshe and Aaron, being on a higher level, they could be answered just by falling on their faces in front of Hashem. Whereas Yeshua and Kolib, being on a lesser level, they had to resort to ripping their clothes. That's the point of Rashi. First let's finish the Gemara and then we'll see. Mask for Rav Zeira, but Rav Zeira questions that. The Tamer of Shmuel ben Achmeni, or some say Rav Shmuel ben Achmeni question that. I have a ksiv Yeshua. If after the pasuk describes that Moshe and Aaron fell on their faces, if the next pasuk says Yeshua and Kolev without a vav ripped their clothes, then it would be correct as you're saying that Yeshua and Kolev only ripped their clothes and did not fall on their faces. But since the pasuk ties it together with a vav, that means hava ha'avod, then we can assume, says Reb Zeira, Reb Shmuel ben Achmeni, that Yeshua and Kolev did both. They fell on their faces and they ripped their clothes. Now, Marsha learns differently than Rashi. What it means is, so again, Rashi is saying it means that there are some people who are going to be answered by Hashem just by falling on their faces. And then there are other people who are going to be answered by ripping their clothes. And now, so first we thought that Yeshua and Kolev only ripped their clothes, and now Reb Zeira and Reb Shmuel ben Achmeni are saying that actually they had to do both. Marsha says that actually no. What it is like this. We said before, Marsha explained, the reason why, again, what's one reason why an Adam Choshev should not fall on his face, Betzibur, unless he knows that Hashem is going to answer him? One reason, Marsha said, because Mechzi Kiyuara looks like he's holding himself higher than he really is. Well, the same thing applies to ripping his clothing. So you have Yeshua and Kolev being on a lower level than Moshe and Aaron. If they were to just fall on their faces in front of the tzibur, it would look like they're putting themselves on the same level as Moshe and Aaron, and that's not appropriate, and therefore instead they rip their clothes. But in fact, then Reb Zeira or Reb Shmuel ben Achmeni points out that no, not really, actually. It actually was both. They actually did both. They had to rip their clothes, but they also had to fall on their faces, and only then were they answered. Marshall also points out, by the way, in the story with Ai, we're seeing that Yehoshua was answered by falling on his face. Why here? By the story of the Meraglim, I was saying that he had to rip his clothes instead of, or in addition to that. And Marshall says, the difference is here, in the time of the Meraglim, Yehoshua was not yet the leader. By the time it came to the story of Ai, he's already the leader of the Jewish people. Yeah, then he's of the caliber to be answered only by falling on his face. But before that, I just said before, they had fought against Yericho, Elchan had taken some of the spoils, then when they went and fought against Ai, they were defeated, and 36 Jews were killed, and Yeshua and everybody are in a panic, and they're tearing their clothes, and then davening before, and falling on their faces before Hashem, and saying, what's going on, how are we ever going to conquer the Canaanim if you're not helping us? And Hashem tells him, the fact is, somebody took from the Chedim, and you have to find out, somebody took from the banned objects, and you have to find him, and execute him, and get rid of those objects, and then the Shekhinah will return to the Jewish people. Since we're mentioning this kind of idea that you have some people are answered with one thing and some with another, so Rabbi Elazar continues with the same kind of expression as far as some other things. But Rabbi Elazar, loy hakol b'kima v'loy hakol b'ishtachavoya. Not everybody, when it comes la'osid lave, when it talks about people, the important people, rulers who are going to be showing honor to the Jewish people, not all of them are going to be standing, and not all of them are v'lo yakol b'yishtachaboya, and not all of them are going to be bowing. There are going to be different groups, some of whom are going to be standing in honor of the Jewish people, and others who are going to be bowing. Malachim obdikachavim b'kima v'sorim obdikachavim b'yishtachaboya. The Goyish kings will be standing out of respect for the Jews, lost in love. The Sarim, the princes, the noblemen, the lower level, the lower level people, they will be Bishtachavoya, they're gonna be bowing. How do we know this? Malachim Bekima, Shenema, the Pasuk says, Koya Amar Hashem, so says Hashem, Goyo Yisrael, the one who redeems the Jewish people, Kedoshai, the holy one of the Jewish people, he says, Livzoi Nefesh V'Gomer, to the nation whose lives were scorned throughout all the time of Golos, the Goyim have scorned Jewish lives and thought that they're not even worth anything, and the Pasuk continues with several other expressions in that vein. Anyway, Malachim Yudu V'Komu, there's going to come a time, the Navi says, the kings will see Jewish people and they'll stand up. The Sorim, the Ishtachaboya, and the king and the princes will bow. Shenema, as the pasuk continues, Sorim, the Ishtachabu, the princes, and they will bow. So we see the kings are going to be doing one form of honor, one form of obeisance by standing up, and the Sorim, the ministers and whatnot, are going to be doing a different form by bowing. Again, Maskef for Reb Zeira v'Itam Reb Shmuel ben Achmeni, but Reb Zeira and Reb Shmuel ben Achmeni has the same question as before. Iksiv Yishtachabu k'dekamrinan. If it said Sorim Yishtachavu, then fine. That would mean, it would mean that the Melachim are going to be doing one thing and the Sorim are going to be doing something else. But when it ties it together with a Vav, means Ha'avod, means they're going to be doing both. So it can mean the kings, it can mean both the kings and the princes are going to be doing both, or it can mean that the princes are going to be doing both. First, they're going to be standing, and then they're going to be bowing. Marsha says, in keeping with his explanation before, that for the first explanation is that Rabbi Elazar is saying the kings don't have to abase themselves, they don't have to be mavaza themselves to the extent of bowing. It's enough that they stand up in honor of the Jews, and that'll be the honor that they show. Meanwhile, the Sorim, who are not so important, if they just stand, then that would be, again, Merci Kiyuar, or it looks like they're acting like big shots, like we're on the levels of the kings, and therefore they're going to have to bow. But then Reb Zeira, Reb Shmuel ben Achmeni, is saying that not necessarily they're going to actually have to do both.
You already stand up.
Well, you have to stand up in order to bow, but the point is, in other words, they're going to stand up specifically in honor of the Jews, and then they're going to bow in honor of the Jews. And it's worth mentioning, by the way, in this connection, a beautiful medrash on this pasuk. Here the pasuk is making the contrast again. The Jewish people up until now were levzoi nefesh, the one that the goyim scorned their lives. Lemesoy of goy, the ones who the pasuk continues, the ones that the goyim considered them abhorrent and disgusting, and so forth. So the medrash tells a beautiful mashal about that. One time there was a city where they had a bathhouse, and they had a wooden flooring in the bathhouse, and everybody is always stepping on this wooden floor. It's the floor of the bathhouse. It's like nothing important. One day, the king says that the king is going to be visiting town. They want to put up, they need to put up in honor of the king. They need to put up a display with the king's image. So they need a good piece of wood for that. They realize the best piece of wood for that is this flooring in the bathhouse. So they take that out and they carve the king's image on it. Now all the ministers and the princes and the this and that are coming and bowing down to it. And like people are saying, what, you know, last week this thing was the floor of the bathhouse, and now we're all bowing to it. And they realize, of course, not because the piece of wood is no different than it was before, but now it has the king's image on it. So it's a whole different mitzvah. So the same way the Medrash says, like the people of Gog and Magog's army and that type, those types are going to be saying, till now we've been doing the most horrible, vicious things to the Jewish people, and now all of a sudden we're bowing to them. What we realize is not so much the Jewish people themselves, it's because now we realize the name of Hashem is on the Jewish people, like the king's image on that piece of wood.
That reminds you, like in Halle, we say the stone that was, like despised, whatever.
Evan Mossab, Bunim Hosea Lodish Pino, yeah, it expresses the same idea. They thought that they were unnecessary for the world, and it turns out we're the cornerstone of the whole world, yeah. Omer of Nachme Yitzchak, Af Onu Noimar, Rab Nachme Yitzchak says, here's another one that we can say in the same vein when you have a pasuk that makes a contrast between two different groups. Loi Hakol La'orav, Loi Hakol La'simcha. La'asid lavoi, not everybody is going to have oro, which is light, and not everybody is going to have simcha, which is happiness. There's going to be two different groups. Some are going to have one, and some are going to have the other. Tzadikim la'oro v'yesharim la'simcha. The tzadikim will have light, and the yesharim, Rashi learns that the yesharim are on a higher level than the tzadikim. So they will be zoicha, not only to oro, but they will be zoicha instead to simcha. Tzadikim la'oro shenema urzaru ala tzadik. Light is planted for the tzadik. The Yisharim the Simcha, and the Yisharim will be Zoicha the Simcha, Dichtim, as the pasuk continues, or the Yisrael Leiv Simcha. So that's according to Rashi, that the Tzaddikim are the lower level, and the Yisharim are higher than that. The Rashba learns the other way around. The Rashba learns that it means the other way around. The Yisharim are on a lower level than the Tzaddikim. The Yisharim are going to be Zoicha to Simcha. The Tzaddikim, who are on a higher level than them, are going to be Zoicha to Ora, which the Rashba says is Ikra Tain. And Kol Shekin, he says, all the more so, they will be Zoicha to Simcha, which is the cause of that Tain. So they're rather the other way around. They will be Zoicha to the Ora, and from that, they will be Zoicha to the Simcha, because the Simcha is like an outgrowth of the Ora. So that's what he says. Urzaru ala tzadik. Simcha tzadikim Hashem. Fine. So that's the point, because he said they're going to have the Ora and they're going to have. So that's the thing. He's understanding. Yeah, so he's saying once you have that Simcha, then Simcha tzadikim Hashem. Yeah. Yeah.
He said it's the higher level.
He says that the tzadikim are higher than the Yeshar. So therefore, so the tzadikim, he says. So that's what I'm saying. So he would explain then that once tzaddikim have the ur, and from the ur, from that you get simcha, therefore it's simcha tzaddikim b'ashem. But he doesn't actually explain that pasuk, but maybe that's what he would say. Marsha adds that actually, like this one, we say in davening, before you shorim to sroimim v'sifs tzaddikim to sbarich, etc., and you're going to higher and higher levels. So that's also mashma, that the tzaddikim are higher than the yeshorim. And then he also adds that, so first of all, actually like this, Tosfos points out, now with the previous two, with the falling on the face and ripping the clothing, and with the king standing up and bowing, we said that actually because you have a vav in there, it means both. It means they're going to be doing both. Well, what about here in the pasuk, Urzaru la tzadik uli yishrei lev simcha? Why don't we have Reb Zeira or Reb Shmuel ben Achmeni also pointing out that you should have that? It means that they're going to have both. So Tosfos says the difference is because since you have Sadik and Ula Yishrei Lev right next to each other in the Pasuk without any other words between them, necessarily it has to mean each one is separate. Otherwise, the Pasuk could have just said, Ur V'simcha Zeru Ala Tzadik V'la Yisharin. Since you have, because it mentioned the Tzadik and the Yashar, it's true it has a Vav between them, but nevertheless, it has to mean that they're separate. Otherwise, it would have just said that Ur and Simcha are for both of them. In the other psukim, on the other hand, you have, and in the pasuk about Malachim Yiruvakamu, you have those several words between Malachim and Sarim. Therefore, we can understand that it means that the Vakamu goes on both, and the Yishtachvu goes on both.
Means the straight one, right?
Yes.
So Rashi explains
that the Yeshorim are higher than the Tzaddikim. Yeah, the Rashba and Marsha say the other way around, that the Tzaddikim are higher than the Yeshorim. Yeah. Anyway,
Tzaddikim also straight, they have to be higher than the Yesharim.
Oh, that depends how you look at it. Anyway, Marsha also adds, means tainug ruch, means a spiritual pleasure. Simcha means a physical pleasure. So therefore, the tzaddik is zoicha to the ruchniestic pleasure. or zarua, it's planted, just like a you plant a seed and grows bigger and bigger, the same way that tzaddik is gaining greater and greater awareness of Hashem's shechina, of the ziv shechina all the time. The yesharim, who again, according to the Rashba, are on a lower level than tzaddikim, they're not zoicha to that but they are zoicha to the simcha, the physical pleasure of la'asid love. Okay. Seder Tanias Perek Sheni. So now that we've now in the first parak talked about, you have a series of fasts that are done if there's no rain after a period of time. So first they have the Yechidim, the Talmid HaChamim fast, then you have three fasts on the Tzibur, then another three fasts that are more severe, then another seven that are the most severe of all. So now when it comes to that last group of fasts, so the Mishnah is going to describe the order of how they would daven on those fast days. It's Machlokas Rishonim, by the way, whether the description that we have here applies specifically if there's a drought or also for other kinds of tzaras. So it happens sometimes, unfortunately, that there are droughts in Eretz HaKodesh. The whole detail of what's described over here, it doesn't seem they do nowadays. It is mentioned in the tour, and it's brought in Shulchan Aruch, but I'm not sure if they actually do this whole Seder. I don't think they actually do this whole Seder nowadays.
They didn't do it on October 7th, but it was simple, so then they probably...
Again, you have Rishonim who say that specifically for drafts, but yeah. Anyway, the Mishnah says, Seder Tanias Ketzad, what is the order of the fasts, specifically, again, of the last seven fasts? Motzianas HaTeva L'Rechoy V'Shal Ir. They bring out the Teva into the city square. The Teva is the so some Rishonim learn that it means literally the word teva means a box. So some Rishonim learn that it means the box in which they would keep the Sifrei Torah. In those times, they didn't always have an Arun Kodesh built into the shul wall like we have. Instead, they would have a niche in the wall, and they would bring a Sefer Torah from somebody's house or wherever it was stored, and they put in a box inside the shul, or actually the Bach learned slightly differently. They would have a box in front of the Chazan, which would contain some of the Sefer Torah, and meanwhile, the rest of them were in the Arun. So according to that, that's the Teva. And then Yeshomim, that the Teva over here means the Bima on which they lay in the Torah. Whatever, they bring that out to the city square. And the Gemara later on is going to explain all these details. Why are they bringing out the Teva to Rechoy V'Shalir? And why are they doing each of the details that it says here in the mission? The bottom line is, each of them is meant to evoke feelings by people that this is a very serious situation, and therefore we have to plead with the Eivish Neferach. Anyway, V'noisn and Ephraim Mikla, they would put burnt ashes, Al-Gabe Teva, on the Teva, over Rosh HaNossi, and on the head of the Nossi, of the Sanhedrin, over Rosh Av-Bestin, and on the head of the Av-Bestin. Everybody else would take some of the ashes and put them on their own heads. So in other words, the implication is the Mishnah is saying somebody else would place them on the heads of the Nossi and the Abbasin. Everybody else would do it for themselves. Again, the Gemara eventually is going to explain, we'll get to, Bez Hashem, why it was like that. Why didn't the Nossi and the Abbasin put it on their own heads? Tosfos, by the way, makes a point that now the idea behind the ashes is to, the Gemara explains, is to evoke Akedas Yitzchak, to evoke the schus of Akedas Yitzchak. The Tosfos actually brings an interesting idea that these ashes weren't stam ashes; they were actually ashes of human remains that had been burnt, and that way they have fragments of bone mixed in with them, and that way they evoke much more Akedas Yitzchak, where Yitzchak would have been brought as a korban and burnt if it hadn't been that the Eibishter told Avraham not to. A couple of Achronim wonder about that. I mean, because since when are you allowed to burn human remains? You have to treat them respectfully and bury them. So how are you even going to have such ashes? But whatever, that's what Tosfos says.
Many people have the chasam and put it on the chasam.
That's something else. The Gemara mentioned in Bava Basra. That's something else. That's as a memory of to remember the churban Beis Hamikdash. The Gemara mentions in Bava Basra that yes, they do that. This is something else. This is to remember Akedas Yitzchak, and that we should feel like we're like ashes and nothing in front of Hashem. Rashi, by the way, makes the point. The reason why the Mishnah has to say the word mikla, Afer by itself means ashes. Why add the word mikla? The point is because you have two very similar words in Lashon Kodesh. You have the word Afer, which means ashes, and then you have the word Ofer, which means dust. So if it just said Afer, you would think that it could mean dust as well. Sometimes we find the words Afer and Ofer used interchangeably. The ashes of Parah Adumah, for example, are called Afar Sreif Zachatas. And you have other examples like that where the two words are a little bit interchangeable. By adding the word Mikla, it makes it clear we mean actual ashes. If the pieces of bone are smaller than a Seorah, then yeah, they're not Matame. Are smaller than a size of a barley grain. Continues the Mishnah, Hazokin Shebehen, the eldest or the greatest Talmud Chacham among them, Oymelefnehen Divrei Kibushin. He says in front of the Divrei Kibushin. Divrei Kibushin, Rashi gives two explanations. One is that the word kibushin comes from a word that means to press. So these are things that press on people's hearts and make them realize that they really have to do tshuva. The other explanation is, Rashi doesn't give the second explanation. Other mafoshim give a different explanation, that kibushin also means it comes from a word for things that are hidden. It means that he tells them things that you should realize that Hashem knows the hidden things you've done as well, and therefore you have to do tshuva. Anyway, he would tell them, for example, Achenu, he'd say, our brothers, when the people of Nineveh did tshuva. Now they did, they put on sackcloth, they were fasting, but in the end, it doesn't say Hashem saw their sackcloth and their fasting, and therefore he overturned the Gzera. Ella, what does the pasuk actually say? Hashem saw their deeds, that they had returned from, that they had done tshuva from the evil ways. So in other words, he's stressing to them, don't think it's just the chitzonius of fasting and wearing sackcloth and ashes and whatnot that's going to evoke Hashem's wrath. It's tshuva that's going to do it. Over Kabbalah who Omer, and he continues in Kabbalah, which means in books of Nevi'im, it also says the kiru levavchem va'al bigdechem, tear your clothes, not your hearts. Tear your hearts, not your clothes. And it would tear your hearts and rip out the ra that's in it and do tshuva rather than tearing your clothes. In other words, tearing the clothes is of lesser importance. It also means if kiru levavchem, you won't need to kiru bigdechem. You won't need to tear your clothes because then the Eibishter won't bring zedus in the first place. So he would tell, why are we calling this part Kabbalah? The word Divrei Kabbalah is a word for is a nickname for words of Navi. Rashi explains the difference is Divrei Kabbalah are called the ones where the Navi directly speaks to the Jewish people, as here Yoel was speaking to the people in the time of the plague of locusts that they had, that we learned about in the previous parak, and he was telling them this pasuk Kiru Levavchem Va'al Bigdechem, as opposed to Yonah. The Navi is not telling the people. This is the pasuk narrating what happened. Therefore, it doesn't as much deserve the words Divrei Kabbalah. Other Mephoshim explain that the word Kabbalah in this context comes from an Aramaic word meaning to complain. Although when a Navi speaks to the people, it can be called Divrei Kabbalah in the sense that he's complaining and telling the people what's wrong. Again, as opposed to with Yonah, where it's a narrative rather than what he's telling them directly. So it wouldn't be just this. The Rambam explains in Hilchos Taanis that it's not just he would say these canned words over here. He would say whatever else is necessary to arouse people to do tshuva, whatever would be appropriate at the time. As we learned about in the previous parak, we had a number of Amoraim who gave various reasons why Hashem holds back the rain. Some of those may have been part of speeches that were given on such occasions. Anyway, the point is to arouse everybody to tshuva. In this connection, by the way, with the torn hearts and torn clothing, there's a story told about, I think, about a Mendel Haradoker, that one time he was asked what did he accomplish while he was in White Russia in that area of teaching people about Torah and Tshuva and all. He said, I came there and I found there were ripped clothing and whole hearts, and I left them the other way around with ripped hearts and whole clothing. In other words, he improved their situation in Gashmius, and he taught them to break their hearts in Tshuva and in Maisim Tovim before the Eibishter. Continues the Mishnah. Omdu b'tfila. So now they stand up and they're going to start davening. Who do they choose as chazan? Meridin lifnei teva. They bring down before the teva. The chazan often stands on a lower place than everybody else, which is why it's called meridin. Zokin, a person who's old. The rogil, because when he's old, for one thing, it means people will look up to him more. The rogil, and he's accustomed to the words of davening. Keep in mind, back then they didn't have sidurim. They didn't have even written sidurim, let alone printed ones. So a person had to know davening by heart. So he has to be rogil. Rashi points out, based on a Gemara and based on a Mishnah and Brachas, that when a chazan is davening by the Omer, if his words flow smoothly, then you know Hashem is accepting his tefillah. And if he stumbles over the words, then you know it's not. So here, you want a good simon for everybody. The Eibishter is listening to their tefillahs, so you want to make sure to have somebody who's rugged. The yesh lebonim, he has children, uveso reikam, and his house is empty. Now, empty can mean two things. On the face of it, it means he has lots of children and his house is empty as he doesn't have enough to be able to give them food. So that way his heart will be more broken and that way he'll daven more sincerely. Later on, the Gemara gives a different explanation that it means that his household, that he and the members of his household are empty of aveiros. So he's a tzaddik. So therefore, he deserves that he's the type of person that Hashem will listen to his tefillahs. So that his heart is complete and as wholehearted as possible when he's down. He says them when he davens over there with Tzibur, he says 24 brochs. Yud ches shebachol yom, the regular 18, which originally was 18, and later on they added v'lamashinim, or mosif alein oid shich, and then he adds an extra 6 brochs. The 6 brachas are added between Re'ei and Refa'enu, which is why we have now, when the Chazan says Anenu, that's why he says it at that point, between Re'ei and Refa'enu, between Goyo Yisrael and Refa'enu, because that's the same place where the Chazan would recite the extra 6 brachas.
Davening on the young people, no?
So it's actually like davening on Rosh Hashanah. In fact, by the way, the tour based on earlier Ga'onim and Rishonim explains here the Mishnah is going to give us a bare outline of what these 6 brachas are. But the tour brings a whole long nusach that they would say. First of all, he mentions that in Shachris, before they even get the Shemana Esrei, they add a whole bunch of Kapitlach Tilim, like we do on Shabbos and Yom Tov morning, but even more so, and they say, and various other things. And then when they come to here, he says they don't just say the bare bones that we're saying over here in the Mishnah, they're adding a lot more. They're adding a whole nuschois of pleas to Hashem to help them. Anyway, the Elohim, so the 6 brachas that he adds, the first one is Zichronus, and the second one is Shofarus. So just like on Rosh Hashanah, he says the brachas of Zichronus and Shofarus, with all the psukim Rashi says that we say on Rosh Hashanah. So again, with the tour, when he brings this, he mentions, for example, that like this, and in the end of Zichronus and the end of Shofarus on Rosh Hashanah, we evoke, we want the schos, we ask Hashem to remember us for good, and we ask that Hashem should remember the schos of the Shofar and of Matan Torah and of the Korbanos to hear on a Tainus Tzibur, we say appropriate passages that are appropriate for the occasion when there's a drought or whatever tzara there is, that Hashem should have Rachmanus on us and the schos of these things. Then the next bracha is based on the pasuk El Hashem Batzorosli Korosi Ve'aneni. He says the capital Kuf. No, so he says the entire capital, and again the tour adds. He says a lot else as well. In other words, like so far we have 2 extra brachas. He says the entire Zichronus, the entire Shofarus with appropriate phrases for Tainus. Then the third extra bracha is he the centerpiece of it is the capital El Hashem Batzorosli Korosi Ve'aneni capital Kuf Chaf, and then it's surrounded by all kinds of other tefillas and piyutim and whatever to make a complete bracha. The end of the bracha, the mission is going to do the end of the bracha. The mission will describe further on what the end of the one is. The next one is Esser Eina Al Harim. He then continues. The next bracha is centered around capital Kuf Chaf Aleph. The Gomer. The next bracha is based on Imam Makim Krosicha Hashem, that capital Kuf Lamed. And the last one on Tefillah Onichiyatov, a tefillah by the poor person when he's fainting. Each of these kapitlach is appropriate to the occasion, and therefore, so again, each bracha is based on this kapitel and it includes many other expressions and statements and piyutim and whatnot that Hashem should answer us in the schos of that. Rabbi Yehuda says, you don't say Zechronis and Shofarus because those are for Rosh Hashanah and for Yom Kippur of Yovel. They don't belong now. El Omer Tachtehen, rather, instead of them, he says, the two other sections that he says are the first 2 brachas. The first one is based on psukim from Melachim, Rav Kiyah Ba'aretz Dever Kiyah, part of Shloimeh's Tefillah by the Chanukah Sabayis. We ask that whenever there are tzaris, that people come, personal tzaris, national tzaris, whatever, people come and daven in the Bais HaMikdash, and Hashem should answer them. So he mentions, as an example, suppose that there's a famine or a dever, then people come to the Bais HaMikdash, and Hashem listen to their tefillas. So Rabbi Yehuda says, instead of Zichronis, they say a bracha centered around those psukim. And another one, Asher Hoyo Dvar Hashem or Yom Yehu, Al Divrei Abatzoris, you have a tefillah that Yom Yehu says, and in Sefer Yom Yehu, Perek Yodalo, the first few psukim, where he's pleading with Hashem at a time when there were Batzoris. The simple meaning of Batzoris means droughts. Mind you, there are some Foshim over there on the Pasuk who explain that Batzoris over there means a siege, but here the Gemara is taking it, the Mishnah is taking it, the Pashtos, in the sense of a Batzoris, a drought. So there was a tefillah that Yom Yehu said over there. So again, we center the book, according to Rabbi Yehuda, we center the tefillah around that brach. By the way, in the tour, when it mentions these dinim, he says, so the halacha is like the Tanakhama, we do say Zichronis and Shofarus, but when it comes to the Kriyas HaTorah that they do afterwards, special Kriyas HaTorah for this kind of Tainus Tzibur, then he says the HaTorah is this section from Yumi, Al Divrei Abatzaris. So we'll continue tomorrow. Be'ez Hashem, the Mishnah continues with the ends of each of the respective brachas, and we have the fascinating and beautiful explanations from Marsha that we'll talk about Be'ez Hashem at length tomorrow about how these kapitlach are particularly appropriate for the occasion, and especially he has an explanation of kapitel kuf beis tefillah la'ani chiyata that talks about about how it's about the golos and everything will blow you away. So we'll have that tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem. Okay. Yom Yom Mashiach Ugo'ola. Let's see, what is today? Yud Aleph Sivan. So the Rebbe talked about how do we Vos Bashteit, how do we express this avodah, bring Mashiach to the Tzidkenu B'Poyel Mamash? So, B'Pashtos, we add in Torah and Mitzvahs, we add in Limun HaTorah, and learning Nigla, and learning Pnimiyas HaTorah, and keeping Mitzvahs B'Hidur, and that includes especially the what's Hazman Groma now, during the summertime, is keeping the Minog of learning Pirkei Avos on the after Mincha and the Shabbos is between Pesach and Shavuos, and then continuing throughout the rest of the summer. So just our learning Pirkei Avos is bringing the Geula closer. Okay, to finish off over here, more of Hilchos Shabbos, finishing off the long Simen Pei that we've been on for quite a while. We talked about yesterday not folding clothes on Shabbos, which you're not again going to use on Shabbos. So by the same token, to make a bed on Shabbos for Motzei Shabbos, you can't do that even if there's time to sleep on it on Shabbos, but you're not planning to sleep on it. If you're planning to sleep on it again on Shabbos, then you can make it. But if you're not planning to and just you have time to, that's not reason enough because you're still preparing from Shabbos to weekday. On the other hand, the Alter Rebbe adds a detail. If the bed is in your living room or something, and it's going to be a bizoyan, if it stays there unmade, then you're allowed to make it because then it's covered Shabbos to have a made bed in your living room, but not when it's in your bedroom. Sure.